I gave this message a few weeks ago, not here, at another church here, and I've amended it quite a bit. And it has to do, strangely enough, with, or coincidentally, with Mr. Zajac's, as well as the announcement we made. And I was going to give you a real cute little intro to tell you about the story that I had read about. And it was about a man who had been sold into the human slave trade into the Middle East. The Middle East country was a dictatorship, and he'd been sold into slavery by his own family. He then served as a domestic servant in a government member's household. He was then accused of rape and sent to a government-sponsored prison where he was to languish for the rest of his life. He was released only after many, many years and after a very strange set of coincidences. One would think that a life lived like this would be devastating after so many severe setbacks, but it's remarkable that he didn't. Let me report it to you. In fact, I'll just let you read it with me in Genesis chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37 is an incredibly important story, and it begins in verse 1. Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the story of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers, and that's literally who we'll be talking about for the remainder of this message. This is the history of Jacob, but it's a story about Joseph. It's all about Joseph as a young man and how he grows. It says, he was 17 years old and feeding with the flock with his brothers, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. Also he had made him a tunic in many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him, and they could not speak peaceably to him. Now I know that this doesn't exist in your family, but this beginning in chapter 37 is a series of chapters that goes on for one of the longest stories about one individual predominantly in the entire Bible. It's nearly 14 chapters. It's a remarkable story. And I think it's one in which we can relate. I promise we're not going to be reading all 14 chapters, but we will cover most of them. So today what I'd like to discuss with you is a life that is truly unmatched in all the Bible of the history of a human being. He went from the bowels of the pit, meant for his death, to a seat next to Pharaoh of Egypt. And when we're at our lowest and we need an example of how it all can turn out, I've entitled this, Ask Joseph. So let me set the stage for you. Without this book, without this chapter, without Joseph, there is no first message that you just heard, because there would be no Moses. Moses could not have existed, not as we know him. There would be no Exodus, no entrance into Canaan, no concept of United States and British Commonwealth. Israel would not be as we know it, and therefore, this entire chapter is pivotal to the rest of the story, hence the 14 chapters. So this family that Joseph is born into, it is a family where strife had existed prior. Jacob, as a father, had a very interesting past. If you remember, Jacob labored with his uncle Laban for a decade and more. He had two wives. One was barren, one was fruitful. And so the handmaid wars and wives wars ensued, producing multiple children from many, many different wives. Chuck Swindoll, in his commentary on Joseph, and he has a comical aspect to this. I'm not sure his math is exactly correct, but I don't want to misquote him. He said, add this all up and you've got a husband, two wives, two concubines, four mothers, 11 sons, one daughter, which did not equal marital bliss. Instead, there was jealousy, strife, anger, lust, deceit, competition, and secrecy. And those were their good traits. And then enters Joseph, the baby of the family and the much loved. And in verse 5, here's a story for all of us about the stories we tell to other people. Now Joseph had a dream, verse 5, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. Can you imagine? They hate you to begin with. If you don't know it, you're clueless. If you do know it and you give them more information, you're still clueless. So Joseph had a dream and he told it to his brothers. So he said to them, please hear this dream. And it's going recounting the dream that he told. Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed, your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf. Now, what I'd like you to do is reread this. Joseph is not perfect. Joseph is not a saint. Joseph is a human being. And he makes mistakes just like all of us do. Verse 8, and his brothers said to him, what a wonderful dream. Do you think that will come to pass? No, they said, shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you indeed have dominion over us? So they hated him even more for his dream and for his words. It gets worse. Verse 9, if he didn't learn from that lesson, verse 9, he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers and said, look, I have dreamed another dream. And this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down, not 12 stars, not 10 stars, 11 stars. And the 11 stars bowed down to me. So he told it to his father and his brothers. And his father rebuked him and said, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in his mind, put it in his heart, much like when Mary, during Jesus' birth, she kept these things in her heart. So Joseph tells the dream, Jacob holds it in his heart. It's interesting, as many of you know this story, it seems that at this point, Joseph can't seemingly interpret exactly his own dreams. He tells him a dream. He doesn't give the interpretation of it. In many ways, it's a prophecy. So be careful about the dreams that you tell people. They may not understand. We move on in verse 12. Then his brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them. So he said to him, here I am. Then he said to him, please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks and bring back word to me. So he, Jacob, sent him, Joseph, out of the valley of Hebron and went to Shechem. Now a certain man found him, and there he was wandering in the field. Now, when you read the story, it's giving you almost hour by hour detail of this man's life. So he's out wandering in a field. The man says, what are you seeking? Should be who? So he said, I'm seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they're feeding their flocks. And the man said, they have departed from here, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. Now, if you want a really, really good story, look up Dothan or Dothan and what happened in Dothan with this family. He goes on. Now, when they saw him afar off, his brothers, even before he came near, they said, oh, look, it is Joseph. What a wonderful thing. He has probably come to help us. No, that's not what they said. They conspired against him to kill him. They said to one another, look, this dreamer is coming. Come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit. And we shall say, some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams. Right? So how do you get rid of the dream? You kill the dreamer. Verse 21. But Reuben, now remember, Reuben's the firstborn, chapter 29. He heard it and delivered him out of their hands and said, let's not kill him. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood, but cast him into the pit, which is in the wilderness, but do not lay hands on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. So Reuben as the firstborn, was trying to get his head together, right? Who would be blamed if anything happened? The firstborn. If you're ever a firstborn in a family, anything goes wrong, right? If you're a firstborn, do I hear an agreement? Right? If you're the firstborn, it doesn't matter what happened in my family. Somehow, some way, my sister did something, it was my fault. Reuben knows that. It's the curse of the eldest. And so Reuben says this. We're going to take it back to his father. We can't do this. Verse 23. So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors, the identifier that was on him, the thing that his father had made him or given to him. They took it off him. This is what made him who he was. He was the one of many colors. As you may know, there was a stage play in a movie about Joseph and the Technicolor dream coat. That's what he was known for. It was probably a beautiful thing. But to the brothers, it was a horrible thing because it identified Joseph as the most beloved of all his children. And then they took him, verse 24, and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat a meal. Now, isn't that interesting? What would you do if you kidnapped your sibling, threw him into a pit? What would you think? Oh, let's go have something to eat. I'm hungry. All right, Denny's is open. He'll stay in the pit. Hey, go eat. What an odd thing. So they sat down to eat a meal. They lifted their eyes and looked. There was a company of Ishmaelites come from Gilead with their camels bearing spices, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry them. Very important phrase. Very pivotal to this entire book. They were on their way down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him. Let's get some money out of it. We'll sell him to the Ishmaelites. And let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." I mean, after all. And his brothers listened. Then Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up, lifted him out of the pit, sold him into the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. What's interesting about this is, think of this from Joseph's perspective. Your brothers have just tried to kill you. You don't know what they're going to do to you. They throw you into a pit. You're down in the pit. They pull you out of the pit. Maybe that's good news. Maybe that's bad news. It's bad news. You're being sold to a bunch of slave traders that are going into Egypt. It just goes from worse to worse to worse. He's elevated, brought down. Literally elevated and brought down again, over and over again. What's also interesting about the 20 shekels of silver is we know from tablets called the Mari tablets of the same time period that was the price, the going price, average price for a slave. Verse 29, then Reuben. Where was Reuben? We don't know. But he returned to the pit. He wasn't aware of what was going on. He returns to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit. And he tore his clothes. And he returned to his brothers and said, "The lad is no more. And I, where shall I go? Where shall I go?" He's beside himself because he is the eldest. So they took Joseph's tunic, this multicolored tunic. They killed a kid of the goats, dipped the tunic in the blood, and they sent the tunic of many colors. They brought it to their father and said, "We have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not?" Just as Jacob had lied, so do his sons. They knew who and what and where and why about that tunic. And yet they asked their poor aged father, "Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not?" That was a stupid question. They knew he would know. No. Verse 33, and he, Jacob, recognized it, the tunic, and said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted, and he said, "For I shall go down into the grave." And that word there is Sheol. We had that come up in one of our last Bible studies. It just means the grave. "Down into the grave to my son in mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Can you just picture this? Just picture this poor father. This is the son, rightly or wrongly. My wife and I have three children. We don't love any one of our three children better than any other. I think it's strange that a father would tell a child that "I love you best of all. There's 12 of you. I love you best." But he did. Now this son is dead. And so this old man, he's crying, he's torn his clothes, he's in mourning. He's in mourning a long time. His son, his beloved son, is gone. It gets worse. It gets worse. And so it says here that now, verse 36, the Midianites sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and a captain of the guard. He is now sold again. He's sold again to an Egyptian, and he has become an Egyptian household slave, as it were. And so he is now in Egypt. He's in the house of Potiphar. We're going to skip chapter 38, which is about Judah and Tamar. It's a very fascinating story. It's a sad story, but it's not germane to the flow here with Joseph. And we move to skip to chapter 39, verse 1, where we pick up the story. Now, I want you to hear the phrasing again, because it's very, very important about going up and being taken down, going up and being taken down. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Eternal was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Eternal was with him, and that the Eternal made all he did to prosper in his hand. This is important. This is the catalyst. This event of going into Potiphar's home in Egypt, again, is another catalyst of moving the story forward and the progression of what eventually will happen in the book of Exodus. And so we see him as this slave, but Joseph's amazing life begins an incredible series of events. There's more to this man's life. They are amazing. Many of them are very, very sad. Seemingly, in many ways, life-ending. But there was a different plan. It says in verse 3 that Potiphar saw that the Eternal was with him. This is the first time God is mentioned in this story, and in a very interesting way. Did Joseph say anything? Doesn't say so. Did he pronounce his faith to Potiphar? I'm a Hebrew. I believe in the God of Jehovah. I believe in the God of Abraham and my father. Potiphar saw. It says he could see Joseph. How? Joseph didn't ask for any special favors. He was a household slave. It is what he did and the way he acted, possibly his attitude. This young man had gone through quite a bit in his life. At this point, whether he's 18 or 19, we are not told. But he's had a very rough life. Potentially, he knew that he'd better act correctly. He was in a foreign land under the foreign servanthood of a very important man. But I think it's important that, as we'll see through the story, and many of you know the story, it's not what, but who. Joseph knew not what he was, because at this point, he's a slave. He's a slave. But he knew who he was. He was God's servant. God blessed him in some way that we're really not told. But Potiphar was a mighty man in Egypt, and he saw and he knew that Joseph was being favored or blessed by God. At this juncture, what do we learn? Does it say to us at this point, it is more important and not what we say, but what we do? Indeed, it says saying things are important. Confession is important, but the actions of people speak louder than words. And we've heard the phrase, I can't hear what you're saying because what you're doing is screaming at me. The actions are important. The book of James tells us that indeed faith without works, without actions, is dead. In other words, what we do says some more than what we can say. We continue the story in the first section of Genesis 39. In verse 3, he saw that he was prospering under God's hand. Verse 4, so Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer. He's lifted up again. He's made him overseer of his house and all that he had put under his authority. So it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Eternal blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Eternal was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. That's very powerful. It was because of Joseph's actions, his attitude, that Potiphar said, I can trust this person. I will turn my entire household over to him. And remember that Potiphar was a very powerful man. And so Joseph, it says in the next section, Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph and said, put your hands over the children's ears, people. And as she said to him, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house. And he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in his house than I. nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Very, very important here. It's important to understand that this is a point where he says that I have been trusted. This is a betrayal. Your husband has given me everything but you, and I cannot and will not lie with you, because it is also a sin against God, which also proves, because this is prior to the Exodus, Moses, and the Ten Commandments being given at Sinai, there was definitely a law. And one of those laws says you shall will, and you will not commit adultery. You will not take your neighbor's husband or your neighbor's wife. So the law is in force at this time. And so it goes on. He refused. Verse 10. "And so it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day, she was incessant. He did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment." It seems that Joseph has got so much trouble with his clothing, right? You notice the similarity here? The poor guy can't keep a coat on his back. "He caught him by his garment, saying, 'Lie with me,'" right? "But he left his garment in her hand." Here we go again. You see, it's amazing, the parallels, right? Right? The multicolored tunic. Man, he's lost it again. He thought, "Oh, not again. Here we go again." Right? "And he fled and ran outside. And so it was when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand, she called the men of the house and spoke to them, saying, 'See, he, by the way, is my husband. He has brought to us a Hebrew to mock us. He came to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice.'" Nobody heard her, but he left his garment in my hand. Verse 16 says, "She kept his garment with her until the master came home. She spoke to him with words like these." Isn't that fascinating in the New King James? "Then she spoke to him," or, you know, the wife spoke to the husband with words like this, saying, 'The Hebrew servant whom you brought to us, right? The woman that you gave me, God, right? You did this, that you brought to us, came into me to mock me," means to laugh at me, make sport of. "So it happened as I lifted my voice and cried," lie, "that he left his garment with me and fled outside." Left his garment. Here, take this, right? Right? Lie number two. "And went outside." He didn't go outside. He ran outside. "And so it was when his master heard the words of which his wife spoke to him, saying, 'Your servant did to me after this manner,' that his anger was aroused. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison." Here we go again. Right? He puts him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in prison. He's there in prison again. He gets elevated, brought down. He's elevated, brought down. This vicious, repetitive cycle. I don't know whether he's going uphill or going downhill. But it is a successive, repetitive, success then failure, success then failure. It's an interesting point at this juncture again, where we look, how does this parallel your life and my life? Joseph is not in a good spot here. He's in a very bad spot. And yes, you know how the movie ends. You know how the story finishes. You know what occurs. But at this point, Joseph didn't. So put yourself in his place. He's now gone from a pit to the slave trade, to servanthood in someone's home, and now into a prison in a foreign land with people who don't speak the language he speaks. They don't have the culture that he has. How does this parallel a life that you and I could live? 1 Corinthians 10 tells us that these words were written for our admonition. When we read about the patriarchs, the men and the women of the Old Testament and of the New Testament, it's written for our admonishing, for our instruction, so that we can relate, so that we can understand that maybe indeed there is a parallel. But in all of this, we turn back to the story, verse 21. But the Eternal was with Joseph and showed him mercy. If this is the kind of mercy that God shows, this is a strange kind of mercy. He's in a prison. But no, it says God gave him, Joseph, favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Very interesting. Can't you see the cycle of events played over in different times, in different arenas, with different people, in different cultures? It doesn't matter. God is always with Joseph. He gives him mercy. He gives him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Verse 22, and the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners. Sound familiar again? Who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. He ran the prison. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority because the Eternal was with him. And whatever he did, the Eternal made it prosper. It makes one think, if you've ever heard the phrase, it's not theologically correct, I'd rather be the doorkeeper of heaven than the king of hell. He's in prison. But even there, God blesses him. Even there, God is watching out for him. And that's important. At every instance of him being brought down, God is with him to give him favor, to help him to prosper, to help him to understand that God is with him. So he's been favored by his father, put in a pit by his brothers. As a slave, he's favored by his master, imprisoned because of his wife's lies. He's put in prison, he's favored by the jailer, but he's going down further and further. But we go to chapter 40, where we again have some dreams. In verse 1 it says, it came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh, in this case, Pharaoh means king. Just put an equal sign between Pharaoh and king. We do not know. We can only guess how long Joseph has been in prison at this point. It just says, it came to pass. Verse 2, and Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the baker. So he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined, like we didn't know, right? Oh, that prison. He's in that prison. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they were in custody for a while. Then the butler and the baker, the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, had a dream, both of them. And each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream was his own interpretation, or it was unique to him. And Joseph came in to them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. Now, if you're in prison, would you be sad? Was the prior morning Joseph saw them and they were happy? No, I think they were sad to begin with. This means they were in deep depression. They are not happy. They're sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his Lord's house, saying, why do you look so sad today? And they said to him, we have each had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. Now listen to the answer. Listen to the response that Joseph gives at this juncture, at this point. Remember, Joseph had his dreams. We don't know that Joseph knew what those dreams meant. He does later. He can't interpret his own dreams. And listen to what he says. They said to him, we each had a dream. There's no interpreter. So Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please. And so the chief butler told his dream to Joseph. And he talks about there was a vine with three branches. And he goes on about his dream. Verse 12. And Joseph said to him, to the chief butler, this is the interpretation. In the three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, if Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to a place, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner, when you were his butler. But, verse 14, but remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For indeed, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews. And also I have done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon. I am innocent. What do you think the butler said? Yeah, everybody in this prison is innocent. Yeah, that's why they're in prison. But he says, don't forget me. Don't leave me here. Verse 16, when the chief baker saw the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, I also in my dream, there were 3 white baskets. Verse 18, Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation of it. The three baskets are 3 days. Remember the 3 days again. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree. The birds will eat your flesh. That's the interpretation. Thank you very much. They already said these guys were sad for being in prison. They were sad today because they had a dream and the baker couldn't interpret it. Now he's interpreted it. I mean, keep all sharp objects away from this baker. It's very sad. Very sad. 3 days you're going to be dead. You're going to be decapitated. By the way, never mind, we're going to talk about birthdays. Forget it. We're not going to go there. Now it came to pass, Now it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, and he had made a feast for all his servants. He lifted up the head of the chief butler and the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief butler to his butlership again, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. What is Joseph to think? We know that it was years. Verse 1 of chapter 41 says, at the end of 2 years. So he's there for another 2 years. But during those 2 years, what did Joseph think? Put yourself in Joseph's spot. Did he say? It's not stated. And I don't wish to add to, but Joseph was a human being. What if you were in prison? What if this had happened to you? What would you say? I know what I'd say. I'm going to rot here forever. I'm never getting out of here. I'm the favored one? Yeah, right. Favored, nothing. Every time I'm favored, I get into trouble. Every time I'm elevated, I'm put down. I'll rot forever here. We are not told this, but is this what he thought? It would be natural, would it not? It would be very natural. I won't say that you'd say that, but I would. I would. Did he say, every time I'm blessed, I'm cursed, and later it means nothing? Every time I get a blessing, it's taken away from me. Every time I think it's going good, something bad happens. This is where God has brought me? ? Is this where God wants me to be? We know the end of the story. We know the end of the story. But Joseph, at the end of chapter 40, the beginning of 41, he did not know the end of the story. Chapter 41, verse 1. It came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he stood by the river. There's only one river that means anything to Pharaoh. That's the Nile. Suddenly there came up out of the river 7 cows, fine-looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them out of the river, ugly and gaunt, and stood by the other cows on the river. And the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine-looking and fat cows. So Pharaoh awoke. I'll bet he did. So Pharaoh awoke. How many of you have had a dream like that? No, don't raise your hand, please. That's a pretty weird dream. He slept and dreamed a second time, and suddenly 7 heads of grain came up on one stalk, plump and good. Then behold, 7 thin heads, blighted by the east wind. Boy, if you want to do another great study, look up the words east wind in Genesis, Exodus, and Deuteronomy. East wind and west wind. An east wind sprang up after them, and the 7 thin heads devoured the 7 plump and full heads. So Pharaoh awoke. And indeed, it was a dream. Thank goodness. Now it came to pass in the morning. So apparently this happened all in one night. I mean, he's had a bad dream, wakes up, right? Goes back to sleep, has another dream. And in the morning, his spirit was troubled, I'll say. And he sent and called for the magicians of Egypt and all his wise men. I want you to picture this. This is Pharaoh in Egypt, right? Headdress, the whole shot, just if it makes you... It's easier for you to think of Yul Brynner, right? Just picture the throne room. He calls in all the magicians, all his prognosticators, all his psychics of Egypt. I imagine he had quite a few. He brings them in. He told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them. Verse 9, pivotal verse. Then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I remember my faults today. Oops. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants. Now remember, he's speaking to Pharaoh, Notice the first third person language that's being used. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in custody. You remember when you were angry with me? Remember that? A couple years ago? And you threw me in prison? Remember that? He's in front of Pharaoh, so I imagine he's, you know, bowing a little bit. Remember when you threw me in prison? In the custody of the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker. Remember, chief baker? We each had a dream in one night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. In other words, it was specific to them. There was a young Hebrew man with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. And we told him he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted according to his own dream. Specificity. And it came to pass, just as he interpreted for us, it happened. He restored me to my office, and he, meaning you, Pharaoh, he hanged him. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, I'll bet he did, and they brought him quickly, I'll bet he did, out of the dungeon. And he, Joseph, shaved, changed his clothing, and came to Pharaoh. You can imagine what state he was in. A prison. He wasn't in Lompoc. He wasn't in Norco. He was in the dungeon of the Egyptians. He probably looked horrible. He probably had a beard. He had long, who knows what he looked like. So they had to clean him up before he came to Pharaoh's throne room. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there's no one who can interpret it. But I've heard it said that you can understand a dream to interpret it. Notice the very first words to come out of Joseph's mouth in the court of Pharaoh. Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. What was the first message on? What was the first message on? It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. He will give an answer of peace. You will know what this interpretation of the dream is. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, in my dream. And so it goes and he talks about the cows and the stalks of grain. Verse 25. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. And the seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years. And the seven empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten. All the plenty will be forgotten. All the fat years, he said, all the years of great plenty will be gone. And the famine will deplete the land. It will utterly devastate it. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine. And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice because the thing is established by God and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh, this is Joseph still speaking, select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this and let him appoint officers over the land to collect one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of plenty. And let them gather. And he goes on and on. He gives him a detailed blow-by-blow account of how he should structure the management of the famine for the next 7 years, technically 14. Verse 37. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. You can see they're probably all nodding. They're probably stunned that this guy they've just yanked out of the prison, right? And cleaned up. Who knows what he looked like? They've just taken him out of the prison, and here he is standing in front of the most powerful man in all the land. He's now been elevated again. I can't imagine. We can only imagine what Joseph is saying, thinking. Pharaoh said to Joseph, inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. He clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, bow the knee. So they set him over all the land of Egypt. He said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no man may lift his hand. Verse 45, and Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zabnath-Paneah, and he gave him as a wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah. Does that sound familiar? Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. There is archaeological excavations going on now where they have just a glimmer of hope for this, but they think they may have found what they call an Asiatic, a statue of an Asiatic in Egypt. They think it might be Joseph. Just to tantalize you with the documentary that's coming out. And so Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before King Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land. And he did indeed manage the drought. He did manage the famine. And we need to look at this, at this last juncture, on what we are to learn. What is Joseph thinking? He's gone from pit to prison and again to near Pharaoh. Who could have dreamed a dream of Joseph's life? Who would have known? Who could have foretold? And what does this say to us? Though you may be where you are now, it may not be a real good place. It may not be a place you want to be. And we cannot see or even imagine anything ever getting any better. So did Joseph. But this also says in these verses that God has a plan. He doesn't always telegraph when the good news is about to come. He didn't to Joseph. In fact, as you read the rest of the story, you'll see that it wasn't until later that Joseph truly understood the dreams he had. It was only until at the very end he realized what God was showing him. Isn't that interesting? We think of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Joseph as the patriarchs, and they are men, all men of incredible faith, but they were human, and they had lives just like you and I do. They wore shoes, they had clothes, they combed their hair, they had to bathe, they had to eat regularly, they got sick, and they had events in their life just like we do. But one thing Joseph did remember, especially in front of Pharaoh, that God was with him, that God would give him the words to speak. Joseph also knew that the past, both the bad and the good, that he finally saw that God restored him over and over and over again. It says that when there's years of famine in Egypt, they did not remember the years of plenty. Joseph did. Joseph remembered where he had come from. He remembered and understood that God had indeed rescued him or saved him from death at least three times that we know of. The remaining chapters in the book of Genesis, the famine hits the entire area, and it is absolutely in that age, in that area, it was widespread. It went all the way over into Canaan. Jacob, who's living in Canaan, sends his 11 sons, the remaining sons, to Egypt, as we know, to buy bread and grain. They encounter Joseph. They don't recognize Joseph. Why wouldn't they? He's an Egyptian. He's second in command to Pharaoh. He didn't dress like a Hebrew or a Midianite or an Elamite or a Canaanite. He dressed like an Egyptian. He had the Pharaoh's ring on. He probably spoke Egyptian fluently. It said there were 14 dialects in the Egyptian language. I would imagine that Joseph had to learn most of them, if not all of them. They encounter Joseph. They don't recognize him. He didn't have a shepherd's crook in his hand. He didn't even have a yarmulke on, so they had no idea who he was. The story is a beautiful story. And through a series of events, Joseph, as you may remember, has a bit of revenge when he reminds himself, or when he recognizes, when his 11 brothers show up begging for grain. He has a little bit of revenge. His brothers are begging for help. But in chapter 45, if you'll turn with me, it's a beautiful, beautiful story. I want you to see how this all comes together. The scene is probably a great hall. He's second in command to the Pharaoh. So Joseph is probably in his full regalia. I'm not saying he had any of the pagan iconography on him. We don't know how he's dressed. We just don't. But he didn't. He didn't have the clothes on that they would recognize him. So his brothers are before him. He's surrounded by attendants. They're begging him. No more demands. Are they on their knees? You bet your boots they're on their knees. It's then and there that Joseph understands the prophecy that was spoken so many years ago. And this is some of the most moving scenes in all the Bible as it comes to play. We'll pick it up in verse 1. Then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him. And he cried out, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard it. Imagine that. He ushers everybody out of the room. Shut the doors. So all the Egyptians leave the room, and he's there. And he cries. They can hear him crying. So this is no sobbing or quiet moaning. They hear him. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Does my father still live?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were terrified. The word dismayed there, doesn't quite convey the term in the Hebrew. They were terrified in his presence. Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near me." That was the last thing he wanted to do. This guy who they don't recognize, "Come near me. I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. And so now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me as a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Hurry, go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry.'" Do not tarry. He says, "You shall dwell in the land of Goshen. You shall be near to me, you and your children, your children's children, your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. There I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty. For there are still 5 years of famine. Behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin. See that it is my mouth that speaks to you. So shall you tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and of all that you have seen. And you shall hurry and bring my father down here." Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. I'll bet they did. I'll bet they did. It is very, very much a moving verse, chapter. And in chapter 50, if you'll turn there with me, and we'll close. In chapter 50, in verse 20, one of the most famous and most poignant verses in all the Bible, and especially for this story, comes to play. Verse 19, Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive. Therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. We have approximately 4 months until Passover. And I think Mr. Zajac and I both had the same inkling of an idea. Passover is one of the most important seasons. And right now we're kind of between holy days, aren't we? I think we're still supposed to think about and prepare for the holy days. They're that important. The sacrifice of Jesus Christ, the incredible historical event of the Exodus. Until next spring, we have 4 months to study. I would invite you, if you would, at your leisure, to read all of Genesis chapter 37 and 50. You can do it very easily in one sitting. It tells the backstory of the book of Exodus. But what does it say to us, to the human beings that live in the 21st century? 3,000 years ago, these events occurred that we've read today. What does it say to us? We probably will never be Pharaoh's right-hand dude. I know I won't. I don't think I'll ever be elevated to that height. But it does say to us that God is the unseen partner. He's always there. He's always with us. And from the pit that we may be in, maybe that pit, that shovel has our handprints on it, just in passing. Wherever we got there, how long we're going to be there, to possibly seemingly to slavery and possibly to prison, God is with us, as he was with Joseph. And maybe we need to look back often, look back so that we can look forward, so that we to remember, we always remember. Maybe in many ways we are all Josephs. Maybe God has something wonderful for us later. In fact, ask Joseph.